Chapter 10. An Unexpected Visitor. I walked to Walworth on Sunday afternoon and met the aged parent at the door.
"My son thought you might visit," said the old man. "He's gone out for a walk, but he won't be long."
I nodded. I tried to talk to the old man, but it was difficult because of his deafness, so I smiled and nodded until Wemmick came home. He was with a Miss Skiffins, who was perhaps a few years younger than him. I understood that she visited the house often, and she was very friendly to the aged parent. She stayed in the house and nodded at him while Wemmick and I went into the garden. I explained my problem. I wanted to help Herbert get into the shipping business. I could give him some money, but I did not want him to know that I was helping him. "I'm sorry to trouble you," I said, "but I need someone to help me."
"Well, Mr. Pip," said Wemmick, "you want to do something very good. Miss Skiffins' brother is in that business, and he may be able to advise us. I'll talk to him."
I thanked him warmly, and we went back inside, where Miss Skiffins was making tea and the aged parent was making toast. Wemmick fired the gun, and we sat down to an excellent meal. Watching him, I thought that there were two Wemmick twins, this one in Walworth and the stiff wooden one in London. After the meal, the aged parent read to us all from the newspaper. I noticed that Wemmick and Miss Skiffins sat very close to one another, and that while they listened, Wemmick's hand moved slowly around Miss Skiffins' back. About a week later, I heard from Wemmick. With the help of Miss Skiffins' brother, he had found a young man called Clarriker, who was in the shipping business. Clarriker was doing well, but he needed money and a good man to help him. Wemmick and I agreed secretly to pay Clarriker £250 to take Herbert into business with him, and then a smaller amount every year. I shall never forget how happy I was the afternoon that Herbert came home and told me about it.
"Well, Pip," he said, "here's some very good news. I've become friends with a man called Clarriker, who's in the shipping business. He wants someone to help him, and he's offered me a job with a good salary."
During the next few months, I often went to Richmond to see Estella. Of course, she was meeting other men, and she often talked about them to me. Sometimes she was cold towards me. Sometimes she was friendly. I was often jealous, and it was all very difficult for me.
"Miss Havisham wants me to go to Satis House," she told me one evening. "She doesn't want me to travel alone, so you must take me there the day after tomorrow, and you must pay for everything from my purse," she reminded me.
That day at Satis House was the first time I saw Miss Havisham and Estella disagree. They were sitting close together, but suddenly Estella pulled her hand away and stood up.
"Are you tired of me?"
Miss Havisham asked her angrily. Estella did not answer.
"Why is your heart cold?"
demanded Miss Havisham.
"You should be grateful to me for my kindness."
"What?" said Estella. "Don't you like my cold heart? But you made it cold. You adopted me, but you never gave me love. You taught me to be haughty and cold. You didn't allow me to be happy because you were unhappy."
I did not want to hear any more, so I left the room. The next morning, the two women seemed to be friends again, and Estella and I returned to London together.
One evening that week, I was with some of my friends. Drummel was talking about a young lady he had danced with.
"What's her name?" asked Herbert.
"Estella," answered Drummel. "She lives in Richmond. She's beautiful, and I'm meeting her again soon."
The next time I saw Estella, I asked her about Drummel.
"Yes," she told me. "I've danced with him. I can't help it if he follows me. Lots of men follow me."
2 years passed. I heard nothing more about my benefactor. Herbert and I moved to a better apartment, and Herbert's work at Clarica's was going very well. 1 week he was in Marseille on business, and I was lonely. The weather was terrible. It was wet and windy, and there was mud in the streets. It was 11 o'clock in the evening. I had just closed my book and was thinking about going to bed when I heard a footstep on the stairs. I took a candle to the door and opened it.
"Is someone there?"
I called down the stairs.
"Yes," said a man's voice.
"What floor do you want?"
"The top floor. Mr. Pip."
"That's my name. What's the matter?"
"Nothing's the matter," said the man,
and he came up the stairs. By the light of the candle, I could see that he was a man of perhaps 60, strong-looking, and with long grey hair. I realised with surprise that he was holding out his hands to me.
"What can I do for you?" I asked.
"Please let me in, and I'll explain," he answered.
He came in and looked around nervously.
"Are we alone?"
"Why do you want to know?" I asked. Then, looking at him closely, I realised that I knew him. I knew it before he took the file out of his pocket.
"You did a fine thing that day on the marshes," he said. "I've never forgotten it."
I was amazed that this criminal had found me, but disappointed too. "It's good of you to take the trouble to find me," I said, "and I hope you've left prison a better man, but I'm a gentleman now, and we can't be seen together. You're cold and wet, however, so will you have a drink before you go?" He nodded, and I poured him some brandy. When I gave the glass to him, I was shocked to see that his eyes were full of tears.
"Do you have a job?" I asked him.
"They sent me to prison in Australia. After I was released, I became a sheep farmer there."
"Have you done well?"
"Very well."
"Do you remember the man you sent to me with £2?
I asked. "He found me and gave me the money. Let me return it now." I opened my purse, took out £2 notes, and gave them to him. He took them and held them to the flame of the candle, watching them burn.
"Can I ask you," he said, "how you've become so rich recently?"
I told him that someone had chosen me and had given me some money.
"Who chose you?" he asked.
"I don't know."
"Can I guess how much money?" he asked. "Since you became an adult, is it perhaps 500 a year?"
My heart was beating wildly.
"And do you have a guardian? A lawyer? A man called Jaggers?" "When I came back to England, I wrote to his clerk, a man called Wemmick, and asked for your address."
I could not speak.
"Yes, Pip, I've made you a gentleman. While I was in Australia, I worked hard, and every pound I earned has come to you. You don't need to thank me. My reward is to see you here, a gentleman."
He put his hand on my shoulder. I was still unable to speak. This awful criminal, this thief or murderer, had given me my money.
"Did you never think it was me?"
he asked. "No, never."
"Where can I sleep?"
he asked. "My friend is away," I told him. "You can have his room."
"Thank you, but not a word to anyone. If I'm found, they'll hang me. I was sent to Australia for life. I was a free man after I was released from prison there, but I'm not allowed to come back to England. If they catch me, it won't be prison, but death."
This was terrible. This criminal had sent me money for years. Now he was in great danger because he had come to see me. I disliked this criminal, but I had to protect him. I took him into Herbert's bedroom and left him. I sat by the fire for hours thinking about my problems. I could not take any more of this man's money, but I could not go back to the forge either. I did not know what to do.